About that, but first, Colin Cullis is with us with Business Unusual this evening, and it's about states and where they should and where they shouldn't get involved, and they really do struggle to control their own national interests. How do they manage global ones? I think that's the subtext of what we're all about this evening, Colin Cullis.
It is, and I was trying to, I mean, this is obviously not a subject that is very easy for everybody to get their head around, so I was trying to find some local sort of relevant example I could use to try and illustrate the point. And thank you, ANC, wanting to change the independence of the Reserve Bank seems to have done it nicely. That's exactly what we're looking to try and address. In fact,
team players, that's what they are.
Very nice team players, thank you. The actual base for the story was the Google fine by the EU for their anti-competitive behavior with their shopping comparison services. They got a 35 trillion rand fine recently, and possibly more to come if they don't change what they do. And the point...
Sorry, 35...
Trillion rand. 2.4 okay. billion euros, $2.7 billion. So a lot of money. The biggest that the EU has given. And part of it was it's probably one of the last times that bodies like that will have the ability to control such large global organizations. So the idea was we had national governments and national corporations. But the internet effectively says... those boundaries don't exist anymore. There's no such thing as a country that a company has to operate in. And we touched on this last week with what we believe sovereignty to be when the world has kind of moved on from those sorts of concepts. And this is kind of a look at that. And so as a way of saying, well, who might have some solution to this? Let me ask you, who controls the internet?
Them.
Them. Good answer.
They control the internet. Them what controls the internet is in charge.
Oh, ANC delegation right now. Right, we better sort that out as well. So it's ICANN. And again, the real answer is nobody controls the internet, but a very big chunk of how the internet works is controlled by a group called ICANN. That's the Internet Corporation for Names and Numbers. And they help you so that when you type in www.702.co.za, you actually get to a website with 702 stuff on it, as opposed to having to know an incredibly difficult little IP address that belongs to some server sitting somewhere in the world. And they're a non-profit organization. They kind of grew out of, when the internet was an experimental project, they had some engineers who were like, okay, I'll look after that, and he did it for the 10 people working on it. And as it expanded, so they just said, okay, I've got a bit more of a role to play. Finally, it was given to the Department of Commerce in the US that said, here's a contract, you look after this stuff. And only on the 1st of October last year was it formally handed over. So no government control. The U.S. said, okay, we're not going to look after this because, of course, the internet is bigger than just the U.S. And they're a multi-stakeholder, consensus-based body. And would you believe it, just a week or two ago, they were here in South Africa for their meetings to discuss how they manage future control of the internet. And it's all done open and transparently. Anybody can attend. People can go and join the specific advisory groups and technical committees. Almost all of the governments of the world have a role to play in the advisory part of it. Even the Vatican has a role and advises on how the internet should be run. And I'm not really looking to discuss them specifically, just to say that model might be a much better one for dealing with how do you look after companies the likes of Facebook and Amazon and Apple and Alibaba and, Alphabet, who are much bigger than any one individual government. Companies or countries in Europe individually probably didn't have the ability to challenge what something like Facebook, in this case Google, had done. There is currently another one that the EU is challenging Apple in Ireland about its taxes. And Ireland's looking to challenge it, which is kind of strange, but it's the nature of who gets to control this and in what way they can do it.
I mean, the reason why countries are keen on controlling companies is because they want to regulate. They want to regulate what companies do. They want to try and stop companies from doing harm. They want to be able to manage anti-competitive behavior. They want to try and keep playing fields level. This is what countries will tell you. But mostly they want access to tax revenue because these are big companies, amongst the most profitable in the world, amongst the biggest in the world nowadays. And to have a level of jurisdiction over them means access to revenue, which is useful.
It absolutely is, except that they're failing. The way the corporate governance and the taxation is set up for most of these large corporations is people are always scratching their head and say, how can a company that big pay almost no tax? specifically in the regions where supposedly they draw so much of the income. And they says, no, well, actually, they're based in this little country, and this country has a very nice tax regime, and so they don't really bother with that. And this is still the easy part, let me tell you, because what do you do when you've got autonomous factories? What do you do when you've got fleets of driverless cars or ships or planes? How do you deal with the notions of cybercrime or cyberterrorism that is not restricted to any one country? This is something that has to be dealt with on a much broader base. And it gets even more complicated, as in the case now at the US, they're busy discussing net neutrality. And it's something that is a competence that sits within, you know, federal government. And Donald Trump's presidency seems to suggest that that might change. And you've got people who are debating how this should work, who really don't even understand how it works. And so when you've got elected officials having to oversee this sort of stuff, it gets complicated. Whereas if you take a bunch of enthusiasts and then have them say, I'm going to form myself as part of the technical committee or the oversight committee or the whichever other kinds of committee, and you create lots of them, then you've got a better chance of regulating an industry in the interest of everybody by the people who've got the interest of that particular thing at heart. And it's not a million miles, I suppose, you'd argue, from like a G20. And I wasn't really fully aware of exactly how the B20 or the L20 or even the Y20 operate when the G20 sort of groups meet. But it does make sense that you'd say there are common things that affect people outside of any one country's ability to manage. And forming those blocks and aligning your best interests for them does make, certainly for me, good sense to start exploring if we're doing it the right way.
It may make sense to you, but it doesn't make sense to countries who want jurisdictional oversight of these organizations. So it strikes me that we're going to be in this impasse for some time to come.
Well, here's a challenge then for national governments to say, how are you going to fix this one? We've touched on these cryptocurrencies a lot. And for the most part, they're saying, as you would say, how do we get some of that cash? But they've got a bigger problem. Mining the blockchain is becoming a huge consumer of energy. Right now, the annual consumption to mine Ethereum and Bitcoin uses more electricity than all of Nigeria does in a year. That's not sustainable. Hardly anybody's using this stuff at the moment. When it actually starts becoming more broadly adopted, it's going to be crazy to do that. And so who's going to be best placed to tell the people who currently, it's a very small group of people, the actual developers of Bitcoin and Ethereum get to make these calls about it, to say, maybe we should get somebody who looks after a blockchain in you know, broader terms, and say, look, you guys are all doing awesome things. The innovation here is wonderful, but there's a downside. You haven't really worked out the best thing because, of course, you're just trying stuff out. It's experimental. So how are we going to try and deal with that? And this could be one of the ways of doing it. And it is messy, absolutely. But I'm kind of reminded of Winston Churchill's reference here to democracy, when he said, democracy is the worst form of government, except for all other forms.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what these bodies may represent for how we look after it. And as, again, you know, there's certainly been significant changes. And if the best way to deal with those changes is keep relying on old, potentially now outdated ways of trying to control them, why not say, hey, let's look at new means for controlling these things so that people with a vested interest to do the best for that particular thing would replace them. And it might even one day lead to us saying, actually, you know, voting and elected governments, rather than running everything, start running specific things. Those people who have got children, while they have children, you're invested in the control and management for schooling. When you no longer have that, you're no longer invested, you no longer play a role. And you get people who are experts in their fields, or at least invested in those things, making comments, rather than everybody getting a voice and just adding to the noise.
I think we should start with the SAA as our first experiment. We get the people who fly to run SAA and to have a say over the way in which it works. I see complications, Colin, but I like where you're coming from. Colin Cullitz with Business Unusual. How do we manage these unusual businesses by the usual rules? We don't. We do need Business Unusual when it comes to their governance.